This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll hear about misbehaving politicians in the Bayou City. We'll get a quick roundup of state lawmakers who are retiring from the Texas legislature, some not so voluntarily. We'll hear from our friend Jim Graham of Texas Right to Life on Texas' declining pro-life ranking. And we'll conclude with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan on a different kind of price gouging in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. Welcome back to this week's Texas Scorecard Radio. Coming to you from the 1836 studios, I'm your host, Tony McDonald. We'll get started this week talking to Charles Blaine with the Houston Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Charles, you've got a report about misbehaving politicians in the Bayou City, one of them trying to raise money off of the hurricane. Tell us about that.
Yeah. State Representative Wayne Faircloth, you know, south of Houston, he's been trying to generate some revenue, sending out an email saying that the hurricane thwarted his fundraising efforts. So now he's got to, you know, run back to Austin to the establishment and generate some extra revenue while for his campaign while his constituents are struggling.
So this is a guy who's saying, hey, my district is absolutely slammed. They're devastated. That means I need the politicians and the lobbyists to pony up some cash to give me some money so I can get reelected. Is he seeing some blowback from this?
He is. You know, like I said, the constituents in his district are struggling, and he's got a challenger, Mays Middleton, out there who's been kind of on the ground helping folks get back on their feet, getting them supplies when necessary, coordinating response efforts. So people are starting to retaliate a little bit when they're seeing his challenger out there helping folks while he's running to Austin for some money.
Wow. It's just so tone deaf. So we've got another tone deaf politician on the north side of town. State Rep Dan Huberty kind of came up in it was a county commissioner's meeting. It was a local government meeting talking about some misbehavior on his part.
Yeah, I mean, this was even worse. During the hurricane, he called one of our local county commissioners who oversees that district and was asking why his trash was not being picked up as people were being rescued within that part of town. So he didn't even wait until the rescue efforts were finished before making his request.
And I remember seeing the clip. These guys were kind of laughing about it, just how tone deaf and insensitive this was. But I mean, literally, there were people whose lives were at stake being rescued, and you have a politician kind of badgering the local officials about his trash pickup.
Yeah, he oversees the Kingwood area, which was really hardly hit, and the commissioner there was in a boat himself helping rescue people, and his house was flooded as well. So Huberty, you know, called him, called the county judge, and called another commissioner, all wondering why his trash wasn't being picked up. So, I mean, it's really self-serving behavior.
Wow. And the other story I wanted to talk to you about, this is something that we'll have to continue to follow up on. It's going to continue to develop, but Mayor Turner's kind of trying to take advantage of this catastrophe with a tax increase. Tell us about your coverage on that.
Yeah, wasting no time there jacking up taxes on folks. So he originally rolled out a nearly 10% tax increase that he wanted to levy on property owners in Houston. There was a lot of pushback, so he's since reduced that. He hasn't come out with a new rate, but he's saying it's going to be roughly half of what it was before, which is still horrible, though. I mean, he's still levying this tax increase on people whose homes were destroyed or damaged. So he's getting a lot of pushback over that.
Yeah, what are people doing? Is there any organization against the tax increase? Are citizens reacting to that?
They are. So last night there was the first property tax hearing for this increase, and there are going to be two more on October 2nd and October 11th at City Hall. And people are showing up in droves speaking out against it. And also the local county Republican Party passed a resolution opposing it as well last night. So people are gearing up for this fight. It's not something they want right now.
When can we expect a vote on that tax increase?
So that vote's going to come on October 18th. That's when council is going to meet and have that final vote on whether they're going to proceed with this or not.
Well, I look forward to hearing more of your reporting about what goes on with that tax increase. It just seems kind of politically tone deaf and insensitive, just like the other things, to come in with a tax increase after a disaster. So look forward to seeing how folks react and how people organize against that tax increase. Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
Now let's turn to Carrie Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Carrie's joining us in the studio to give a retirement roundup. These are some state lawmakers who are retiring from the Texas legislature, some not so voluntarily. Carrie, tell us about Larry Gonzalez. Who is he and why is he leaving the legislature?
Thanks, Tony. So Larry Gonzalez is a Republican lawmaker from Williamson County, Round Rock, Texas, right here north of Austin. And he's kind of viewed as one of the most bureaucratic members of the Texas House. He's worked in government agencies. He's worked as a staffer before becoming a lawmaker. And now he's retiring from the Texas House to go do that again, taking a position at the University of Texas System to do government relations for the university.
So this is seen a little bit as a reward for some of the obstruction that he engaged in the Texas House.
Absolutely, Tony. Is kind of in his position in the Texas House, Larry Gonzalez served as the chairman of the Sunset Commission, where he basically looked at the state agencies who were coming up for reauthorization every single year. And in that role, he prevented conservatives from offering a lot of conservative amendments, specifically amendments to protect life and amendments to limit toll roads on, you know, kind of state health boards and on Texas transportation boards. And he was a number one enemy of conservative reform.
So he was going to have a tough reelection having to defend that record. Let's talk about another lieutenant in the Texas House up in North Texas, another one facing a tough challenge, a tough reelection, who's going in a little bit of a different direction.
Sure. So Cindy Burkett up here in Dallas County, kind of Mesquite, Sunnyvale, that kind of area, she was challenged in the 2016 primary by Jonathan Booz, a Dallas young Republican, a conservative, and he came very close to unseating her in that election. And it looks like she's kind of looked at the race and decided she's not even going to risk it. Booz is already running again, and she thinks that he can beat her. So she's deciding to take her record and run for the Texas Senate instead.
Now, the problem with that is she's, you know, everybody runs as the biggest, most conservative leader ever, but she's running against really, truly one of the most conservative senators, Bob Hall.
Sure, absolutely. So Bob Hall campaigned that he was the right Bob for the job back in his original campaign, and since joining the Texas Senate, he's absolutely proved it. You know, he can put his accomplishments, those of the conservative Texas Senate, with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick passing almost all of Governor Abbott's agenda against Cindy Burkett's, you know, policies of killing that same agenda, and put that before taxpayers, put that before voters, and let them decide what they want more of. So, and I think they're going to choose conservative representation, and I think they're going to reelect State Senator Bob Hall.
So this is a clear choice for voters. Let's talk about some other retirements. Mark Keogh down the Houston area.
Sure. So Mark Keogh joined the Texas legislature as a conservative, but kind of quickly became a little bit unmoored of the conservative bloc. He didn't really join the establishment wing in the Texas House, but he kind of existed on an island. And he's chosen instead not to run for re-election. He's going to run for Montgomery County Judge instead. And there in the Woodlands, I think we're going to see the return of Steve Toth, the conservative lawmaker who served in the Texas House immediately before Mark Keogh. Coming back, he had launched bids for state senate, for Congress, both of which fell short, but both of which he won the Woodlands very decidedly. And I don't think he's going to have any competition in trying to reclaim his old seat.
Yeah, so we could see him come back. Another state representative who started and led his long time as a conservative and then kind of moved towards that mushy middle, Jody Lobenberg giving it up as well.
Right, so if we go north on 45 up to 75 in Collin County, we'll get to Jody Lobenberg's district, kind of around Parker, that area of Texas. And as you said, Jody Lobenberg came in as a kind of a rock-ribbed conservative in Collin County, coming to the Texas House. And kind of she abandoned those principles last time when she voted for Scott Turner, who ran against, voted against Scott Turner, who ran against House Speaker Joe Strauss, a liberal Republican who controls the Texas House with the support of Democrats. As soon as she left the conservative camp, she started kind of waffling on all kinds of issues.
Yeah, voting record declined as well.
Absolutely. Her voting record, you know, really fell on the Fiscal Responsibility Index, our tool that we provide voters to view lawmakers' records on. And now she's not running for re-election, and we're going to kind of see an open seat that might be very contentious right there.
Another one, Larry Phillips, another North Texas lawmaker, been in for quite a long time, giving it up, retiring instead of trying to face re-election.
Right. Larry Phillips up there in Sherman, Texas, hanging his hat up rather than run for re-election. And we're seeing a very interesting open seat election pop up with Kevin Couch, who's a Sherman City Councilman, Brent Lawson, who's a Van Alstyne engineer, and then kind of Reggie Smith, who's the Grayson County GOP chairman and seems to be Larry Phillips' hand-picked candidate. We see that these open seat races never really are very predictable. It's very hard to figure out who is going to win those races, and I think voters are going to have a really interesting thing to watch right there in Sherman.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that one. The last one here, Pat Fallon leaving the House, trying to run for the Senate. Tell us about that race.
Sure. So Pat Fallon, a conservative member of the Texas House, but doesn't really have much in terms of legislative accomplishments because of the regime that controls the Texas House. Again, you know, House Speaker Joe Strauss, who maintains power with the support of Democrats, running against Craig Estes, who no one really views as the most conservative lawmaker, but as part of the Texas Senate, he's been instrumental in enacting a whole bunch of conservative reforms. And so it'll be a really interesting race to watch Pat Fallon take his campaign of fighting for taxpayers up against Craig Estes's campaign of actual legislative accomplishments and voters making a decision on that area. That's a district that includes, you know, kind of all the way from Wichita Falls to Parker County to Sherman, kind of
big
all that
swath
area
of West Texas,
Northwest North Texas kind of stuff.
All right. Well, thank you, Kerry. We'll look forward to having you back on. I think there will be more of these retirements as the cycle moves forward. So look forward to following all these races with you.
Thanks, Tony.
Up next on Texas Scorecard Radio, we have Jim Graham, the leader of the oldest and largest pro-life organization in Texas, to tell us about Texas' declining pro-life ranking. Well, it's a pleasure to have on this week's Texas Scorecard Radio our friend Jim Graham with Texas Right to Life. Jim, good to have you on the program.
Tony, it's always an honor to be on the air with a fellow conservative organization.
So we were talking about this, the fact that Texas is declining in its pro-life ranking. We were talking about Americans United for Life does a ranking of the different states of how pro-life those states are, and we've seen a really bad decline over the last decade. Tell listeners a little bit about that, and then maybe we can talk about what some of the root causes of that decline are.
Everyone, when they hear Texas, they think Texas is the reddest of the red states, that we are the mecca of pro-life. And so a way to look at whether that's objectively true is that there's an organization, AUL, that ranks the states every year. Comes out around January, and so you can just see, okay, where really are we? And they look at most of the life issues, and right now we are ranked, and if you can go to their website, AUL.org, and the life list overview, we're not one, we're not two, we're not even top 10. You have to go down to number 17 to find Texas on their ranking list.
How does that compare to where we were, you know, a decade ago?
Well, it's interesting. There's one way to look at it. In 2008, we were number 4. And Joe Strauss was elected in 2009. And now we're 17. So
Joe Strauss, Texas House Speaker, very liberal Republican from Bexar County. His wife used to be on the board of Planned Parenthood. Mother, I think, associated with Planned Parenthood. You know, kind of clearly not a pro-lifer, and has been an obstructionist on these issues every session since 2009. So you would say that he is kind of to blame for this decline.
I would say that he has been intrinsically part of the decline. I think you have two different segments. You have internal forces, and he's one of them, and then you have external forces, such as organizations, fake pro-life organizations that prop people like Joe Strauss and Byron Cook up. So he is, I guess you would say, the puppet that is in charge of things, or at least is in front of everything. But there are a lot of other villains that have caused us to fall from number 4 to number 17.
Now, before we talk a little bit about some of those villains and where the obstruction's coming from, tell listeners a little bit, what is it that we aren't doing? I guess it's that we're falling behind progress on the laws from a pro-life perspective that other states are taking, or are we actually adopting policies that are worse, or are things getting worse here?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I would say in the last session, we did pass some stout measures that were as tough as we could make them. But for years, we were forced to accept half measures. And part of the problem was in the Senate, where we had the blocker bill, where we were forced to get 20 votes, and we had to always get a Democrat's vote, and or two. and they would demand weakening loopholes be put into our legislation. So that was part of the problem, but then guess what? We took out three rhinos. We took out Wentworth, Corona, and Duell, three fake Republicans, and we were able to get rid of the blocker bill. And under the leadership of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, now solid pro-life legislation does go through the Senate with no weakening amendments and no loopholes. So that was part of the problem in the Senate, but we've cleaned up the Senate. Now the problem is solidly in the House, where we cannot pass pro-life legislation through.
Yeah, so, you know, this was one of the issues that Governor Abbott put on the special session call. And as you mentioned, y'all were able to pass some very robust measures. But what is it that we are failing to do? I mean, obviously there are some efforts, you know, y'all's legislative agenda is far from done. What is it that we are not able to pass through this legislature?
Well, right now we saw Byron Cook kill a very important piece of legislation that would have stopped counties and municipalities from funding Planned Parenthood. We have done some information requests and discovered that these different counties and cities are paying Planned Parenthood. So while we think, oh, Planned Parenthood can't get federal funds because of the Hyde Amendment, and well, we've pretty much taken Planned Parenthood out of the state budget, well, lo and behold, they actually are receiving our tax dollars. They're just from a far more regional municipality. And so Byron Cook stopped that bill. It actually disappeared for over 2 weeks. It was passed out of his committee, and in a mere procedural move where the bill should have been sent over to another committee, it disappeared. And
this is the one they literally failed to, they did the committee report and had the paperwork, and it was all of a matter of walking, you know, several hundred yards over to the committee coordinator's office, and they couldn't get that done over 17 days.
Correct. And that's just one more example of how Republicans in name only, fake Republicans, rhinos, will go through the motions, and it's kabuki theater. They will say, oh, well, we passed that bill. We just ran out of time. Well, they made it disappear for 2 weeks, ate up the clock. Is basically they were playing the famous four-corner offense, which was so deadly because you could never get the ball. They would just keep moving it around. They would never let you shoot on the bucket, but they would run out the clock. And that's what they did with this piece of legislation. So we see things like that. We're seeing games being played in the House. And also there's all sorts of legislation to protect people who are already born. Texas has a horrific bill or a horrific law whereby treatment can be removed from a patient against their will. And then you're given 10 days to try and find another place to be treated. It is the most egregious law for those who are already born in our nation, and the hospitals and the doctors that remove treatment from you against your will are given complete legal immunity.
Wow.
And this is something we can't even get near because of big medicine and the fake pro-life groups like Texas Alliance for Life that could give cover to the elected officials who won't touch this issue.
And this is something I wasn't aware of. You know, when I first became involved in the conservative movement, and I was invited to the March for Life, you know, to the Capitol, and there was Texas Alliance for Life, and they were there, and they were, you know, I remember Joe Poyman talking about pro-life license plates, which I thought was an odd thing to be obsessed with whenever there's, you know, people dying, but I thought it was, you know, okay, it's a good bill, fine. You know, I've had to kind of come to this rude awakening that there really are these really horrible organizations that are out there pretending to be pro-life advocates in this state, and they're actually holding the work that you and your organization with Texas Right to Life are trying to get done.
Well, it is mysterious until you apply the old adage of follow the money. And
right.
If you go to a website such as transparencytexas.org,
Our friend Tracy Marshall, transparencytexas.org, we've had Tracy on the program. What a great website that they have.
They do. And if you just pull up Texas Alliance for Life, their PAC, and I'm looking at it right now. Here are their top donations. Their number one donation to their PAC is $27,000 from Jason Villalba. And then you go down, and there's another rhino that was defeated, Kevin Downing. Doug Miller, another rhino chairman, $15,000 that Texas Right to Life helped defeat. And then guess what? The four and five spots are Texans for Joe Strauss for $15,000, Texas House Leadership for $15,000. So Joe Poyman and Texas Alliance for Life's true number one PAC funder is Joe Strauss.
Wow.
And that just explains everything. This guy is a shill for Joe Strauss and the Republican establishment. He's bought and paid for.
So, and let's talk a little bit about that Republican establishment, because if you look at the House, you got 95 Republicans. And admittedly, there's, you know, Sarah Davis, who's open, out, pro-abortion, pro-choice, you know, not with us, doesn't pretend to be with us. So there's that. So we're down to 94. And J.D. Sheffield, who, you know, he isn't out and proud about it on his campaign materials, but, you know, on the House floor, he'll get out there and be pretty open that he is, you know, for abortion rights, you know.
Right.
So you're down to 93 there. But then 93 of them are out there saying, pretty much, they're pro-life. They're reading the party line on the life issue. Yet we're seeing these bills killed, you know, holding the paperwork back, seeing bills killed in the calendars committee, seeing stuff not get hearings. What is it that they're doing? I mean, how does this work that you can have such a, you know, near supermajority of allegedly pro-life politicians, yet your issues can't get through the process?
Well, our issues are not unique. While they are maybe more visceral and the lightning rods for some, I think the same we saw is true for those that were seeking to protect their women and their daughters with privacy protection bills. We saw the same that people that didn't want their money going to unions with the paycheck protection, property tax reform. We saw all sorts of legislation killed the same way that pro-life legislation was killed. Yes, you're right. If this legislation, a pro-life bill, got to the House floor with 95 Republicans, we found that we got more than 90 votes. We received probably 90 91, 92, depending on who was on the floor and who was actually voting. And I think the same would have been true for any of the issues, paycheck protection, the privacy bill, property tax reform, any of this. But what is happening is that there is a cabal of liberal Republicans, who are Republicans in name only, who have united with the Democratic Party to control the House. And it's all about power. And the deal is that the Democrats don't want substantial conservative legislation passing, or they will remove their block of votes from Joe Strauss and all the people, Joe Strauss, Charlie Guerin, Byron Cook, will immediately lose power. So they have to placate the Democrats and these Republicans who are in this cabal who don't believe anything are only too happy to do so. They're only too happy to kill all this legislation, including pro-life bills.
So tell us a little bit, let's finish up here. We're kind of running out of time. But tell folks, listeners, where can they learn about the work that Texas Right to Life is doing, and what can, how can they get involved to help you overcome all of these obstacles?
Well, if you want to look behind the proverbial curtain, go to TexasRightToLife.com. We are publishing all sorts of stories about what really happened. What did Byron Cook really do? What did Joe Strauss really do? How did things operate? Why did things get passed? So go to TexasRightToLife.com. But Tony, I think the story is going to be the same story that's on y'all's website or Texas Homeschool Coalition's website. All these other conservative organizations are going to say that the establishment is working against all of us. It's not just personal where they don't like our leadership or our style. Somehow these elected officials don't like the leadership or the style of any conservative organization in Texas or the agenda of any conservative organization in Texas. There's probably, and I spoke to a state rep this morning that some would consider way in the middle, if not on the Strauss home team, and he thinks Strauss is done. That there's a growing unrest with the Republican body of representatives, that this has to end, that this isn't right, that they aren't getting the bills to take home to their district that they need. If nothing else, it's just about self-preservation. They need to have more wins. But some of them actually do believe in the platform, and they want to start seeing more of these bills because, as we just said, if any conservative piece of legislation, any Republican plank gets to the floor, it passes with 90 votes. Instead of passing maybe 10 conservative, just flame-throwing, stout pieces of legislation this session, 100 pro-life conservative, fiscal conservative, pro-family, pro-life, pro-gun, 100 bills should pass every legislative session. Because, you know, in California and New York, they're passing 100 seriously liberal pieces of legislation every time they meet.
That's right. All right, Jim, tell listeners a little bit about where they can learn about the things that Right to Life is doing and how they can become involved.
Tony, it's actually very easy. It's simply go to the web, TexasRightToLife.com, or go to Facebook and go to the Texas Right to Life Facebook site.
Well, thank you so much, Jim. It's just good to have you as a brother in this fight. We are all working together to overcome our common opponents on all of these issues and to represent what the people want to see done in their government.
Tony, it's an honor to be with you all, and Texas is showing the nation that the fiscal conservatives, the homeschoolers, the right-to-lifers, the grassroots people, the Tea Party people can actually all band together to defeat the Republican establishment and enact true conservative measures. And this is going to become the model for the entire nation. And it's an honor to be with you.
All right. Thank you so much, Jim. Until next time.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At TexasScorecard.com or EmpowerTexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at EmpowerTexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
As always, we'll finish this week's program with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan. Michael has a commentary on a different kind of price gouging that's affecting Texans in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey.
Whatever you might think of Texas laws against price gouging in an emergency, what about when government is the one doing the gouging? Hi, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's commentary. What constitutes price gouging is often the eye of the beholder. As demands rise, so do prices. It's the way the market naturally deals with the problem of scarcity. Illegal price gouging occurs when someone seeks a price over and above that natural price driven by supply and demand to take advantage of someone in a time of crisis. Enter the city of Houston and its liberal mayor, Sylvester Turner. With the landfall of Hurricane Harvey, Houstonians suffered one of the worst natural disasters to strike Texas in decades, and the pain will go on as everyone works through the cleanup and rebuilding. The city is already making out like bandits as a result of the storm. Several years ago, the city council added a rain tax to Houstonians' utility bill. Yeah, you heard that right. A tax on rain. When it rains on your property, you pay a tax. After getting soaked by rainfall, now Houston taxpayers are getting smothered by the rain tax. The revenues were supposed to go to flood control projects, but City Councilman Mike Kubayash told KHOU-TV last year that millions of dollars are being misspent. I know, you're shocked. Not content with simply taxing the rain that flooded people's homes, Turner now wants to hike property taxes by nearly 9%. Talk about piling insult onto injury. A homeowner evacuated from a flood returns to find many of her earthly possessions ruined and destroyed, facing the cost to rebuild, and Sly Turner wants to raise her taxes. The worst part is that state law authorizes this immoral price gouging by local governments. A business owner raising prices like this on the backs of storm victims would go to jail. But Mayor Turner and the Houston City Council can do it with impunity. Taxpayers suffering the effects of a natural disaster shouldn't also have to pay for the man-made disaster brought on by years of fiscal mismanagement by liberal politicians. Houston officials should slash unnecessary expenses and end programs unrelated to public safety and rebuilding key infrastructure. First came the floodwater, now comes Mayor Turner bringing a flood of taxes. Sylvester Turner should be ashamed of himself. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's it for this week's Texas Scorecard Radio from the team here. Thank you for joining us. Just a reminder, of course, you can catch us publishing stories day to day at TexasScorecard.com.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at EmpowerTexans.com.